There was a young man on an airplane flying from Lakeland, Florida to Atlanta, Georgia. His heart was broken, and as he gazed out a window into the clouds, he thought, "I wish the plane would crash so that I could stop hurting." That young man was me. Most of us know from experience that emotional pain is just as real as physical pain. And sometimes we feel so helpless in our present situation that we fantasize about dying. And I wonder if any of you have felt that way. In the movie It's a Wonderful Life, George Bailey felt this way on Christmas Eve in 1946. Even though several people were praying for him, he was so gripped by fear and pain that he decided to jump off a bridge and end it all. It may be surprising to learn that this classic Christmas movie is about human despair and how God helps us find the strength that we need to persevere in life. If you've seen the movie, you'll remember that in the opening scenes, we get a glimpse into George's early life. We see how he rescues his little brother from drowning, which causes him to lose hearing in one ear. We see how, as a kid, he had dreams of doing something important with his life. While in high school, he saved money for college, but we see how this dream was shattered when his father died and he felt compelled to take over the family building and loan business. Finally, after getting married, we see him trying to enlist in the military to fight in World War II, only to be denied because of the loss of hearing that had happened when he rescued his brother in childhood. And looking back, George feels like a failure because in his eyes, he never did anything important. Things get even worse after the war in 1946. George's business up to this point had always scraped by, but now the big banker in town, Mr. Potter, was looking for an opportunity to put him out of business. On Christmas Eve, George Bailey's Uncle Billy was taking an $8,000 deposit from the family business to Mr. Potter's bank, and this would have been about $100,000 today. But he lost the money, and when Mr. Potter found it, he kept it for himself and told no one. When George finds out that the money is gone, he loses it. If he can't make up the deposits, he will go out of business. Mr. Potter watches all this gleefully in hopes of destroying his competitor. George, desperate and afraid, starts to think that everyone would be better off without him, which leads him to pray. Check out this clip.
God. Dear Father in heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, show me the way out at the end of my rope. Show me the way.
At the end of this scene, we find George on top of a bridge ready to jump, reminding us that sometimes life seems so hard that we can't imagine going on. We have a ringing in the house, okay? Maybe you've never contemplated or attempted suicide, but all of us have moments when we're overwhelmed with suffering and hopelessness. And when this happens, some people see suicide as the only way out of pain. As we see in this movie, this does not necessarily mean that a person has completely turned away from God. Before George decides to jump off the bridge, he prays. And this is an important detail because for a long time, the church saw suicide primarily as rebellion against God, a mortal sin that always led to hell. But we know better today, don't we? We know that suicide results from intense and prolonged emotional pain that becomes unbearable when combined with a deep sense of hopelessness. And we also discover that religious faith by itself is not always sufficient to turn the tides. And in fact, some people seek God and pray fervently before ending their life. This happened here at First UMC, Cocoa Beach. Scott Colburn, a friend of mine who played guitar in our praise band, came to church almost every Sunday. As he was battling with depression and parts of his life were unraveling, he sought God here in this sanctuary. He worshiped, listened to countless sermons, prayed, and struggled. He reached out and tried to make Christian friends, but life became too much for him. And one day when Steve Rutsis and I tried to pick him up to go surfing and play Linda, he took his own life. We couldn't believe it. And to this day, it breaks my heart that we didn't know what was going on in his head and that we couldn't change his mind. And I don't think for a minute that Scott did this to rebel against God. I think he did it because he was overwhelmed by pain and hopelessness. And instead of rebelling against God, I think that he did it because he wanted to be with God and his dad, who had died months prior. And while I do not believe that this was God's will for Scott's life, I do believe that he was a beloved child of God, and that God looked upon his condition not with anger, but with compassion and grace. When we find ourselves in this kind of darkness, we can get tunnel vision and think that the pain is never going to end, and that the people around us would be better off if we were gone. Even though loved ones know that suicide would lead a permanent wound, the person in the grip of despair has a hard time seeing otherwise. Again, most of us wrestle with these kinds of thoughts at one time or another, and it doesn't make us a bad person. Even some of our heroes in the Bible experienced despair and wanted to die. Take, for example, Moses. When leading the Hebrews out of slavery in Egypt, about 20 years into the journey before they reached the Promised Land, there was a group of people who didn't want him to be their leader anymore. After being overwhelmed with opposition and criticism, he prayed to God to take his life. After being overwhelmed with opposition, he just didn't want to keep going on. What Moses couldn't see at the moment was that the situation would resolve, and he would lead the people for 30 more years toward a future filled with hope. Then there was King David, the most revered king in all of Israel, who is recorded as saying in Psalm 6, "I am worn out from my groaning. All night long I flood my bed with weeping and drench my couch with tears. My eyes grow weak with sorrow. They fail because of all my foes." In a time of crisis, King David wanted to die, because he couldn't see that his best years were ahead of him. Then there's Elijah, one of the greatest prophets in the Bible, If you remember, King Ahab and Queen Jezebel wanted to kill him. So he fled into the wilderness, and when sitting under a broom bush, he prays for death, saying, "I've had enough, Lord. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." Again, he couldn't see that his best years were ahead of him. So at some point or another, most of us can identify with these biblical heroes. And it is precisely because the Bible is honest about the human experience of suffering and despair that it can be an incredible source of hope. God helped all the characters that I just mentioned, help them find a way to move through their pain and rediscover purpose and joy. And when I read these stories, it gives me hope that I can make it through too. When going through times of darkness, the Bible reminds me that God is with me and for me, and that God will help me move through the pain and come out on the other side, again, with new purpose and joy. This is a primary theme in the Old Testament book of Job. If you remember, Job went through hell on earth, and his friends tempted him to suicide by saying, "Curse God and die." But Job refuses to give up hope and day by day decides to trust in God's ultimate salvation. And at the end of the story, his life is restored. Although the suffering left a permanent mark on his heart, as it does to us, beauty and blessing returned in new ways. And I wonder if you've ever experienced redemption like this. I know that I have. And I have seen it happen to countless others. It just seems to be a fact of human existence that we go through dark seasons. We feel like our pain is never going to end, and we almost give up. But at just the right time, we experience a kind of rebirth, a second chance, a new life, a life that makes our life worth living again. If there is anyone here this morning that is thinking about suicide, I want to say clearly, this is not God's will for you. God loves you. God understands your pain. You are not alone. And God promises to walk with you through the darkness until you can find a better day. And as strange as this may seem, this is an important message in the real Christmas story. When I was looking at the resources for this morning, I thought, what a depressing topic for the Christmas season. Only to be reminded that this is an incredibly important part of the real Christmas story. We are reminded in the Gospel of John, which we read on Christmas Eve right before the candlelight ceremony, that Jesus is the light that came into the darkness, and the darkness could not overcome it. Again, if you are wrestling with thoughts of suicide, I have resources to share with you, so please call me. If you don't call me, you can call the National Suicide Hotline or even 911, and someone will be able to help you. We want to help you here at our church. God wants to help you. Others want to help you. So reach out for help. This will not magically make your pain go away, but day by day, things can get better. I promise you. The goal is to find a way to endure the darkness until you can return to the light. Now, returning to our movie, right when George Bailey is about to jump off a bridge, another man jumps first and starts pleading for help. George, temporarily forgetting his own problems, jumps in to save him. The man turns out to be Clarence Oddbody, Angel, second class. Check it out.
That's why I jumped in. I knew if I were drowning, you'd try to save me. You see, you did. And that's how I saved you.
Very funny.
Your lip's bleeding, George.
Yeah. I got a bust in the jaw in answer to a prayer a little bit ago.
Oh, no, 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 George. I'm the answer to your prayer. That's why I was sent down here.
How'd you know my name?
Oh, I know all about you. I've watched you grow up from a little boy.
What are you, a mind reader or something?
No.
Well, who are you then?
Clarence Oddbody, AS2.
Oddbody? AS2, what's that AS2?
Angel, second class.
After this scene, George and Clarence Oddbody get dressed and go outside, where George says, "I wish I had never been born." The angel seizes on this opportunity to show him what the world would be like if he had never been born. George thought that his life had been a waste, that he had not done anything important. But the angel wants him to see all the ways that he did make a difference in the life of others, so he takes him on a journey, and he shows him all of these connections and the unexpected consequences in a world where George never existed. The journey ends with this scene.
Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he?
I've heard of things like this. You've got me in some kind of a spell or something. Well, I'm going to get out of it. I'll get out of it. I know how, too. The last man I talked to before all this stuff started happening to me was Martini.
You know where he lives?
Well, sure I know where he lives. He lives in Bailey Park.
Are you sure this is Bailey Park?
No, I'm not sure of anything anymore. All I know is this should be Bailey Park. But where are the houses?
We weren't here to build them. Your brother, Harry Bailey, broke through the ice and was drowned at the age of 9.
That's a lie. Harry Bailey went to war. He got the Congressional Medal of Honor. He saved the lives of every man on that transport.
Every man on that transport died. Harry wasn't there to save them because you weren't there to save Harry. You see, George, you really had a wonderful life. Don't you see what a mistake it would be to throw it away?
Have you ever heard of the butterfly effect? It's the idea in chaos theory that explains how a butterfly who flaps its wings on one side of the world can set off a chain of events that leads to a hurricane on the other side of the world. Everything is connected in ways that we simply cannot comprehend. And due to this interconnectedness, when small things happen, they often lead to bigger things that we don't anticipate. When it comes to our faith as Christians, we believe that God works in mysterious ways through this interconnectedness to guide the world according to his good purposes. And because human beings are an important part of these connections, we have a part to play in making the world more like God wants it to be. In other words, God works through us to help move our lives, our families, our communities, and our world closer to the love, peace, joy, and hope that we celebrate in Advent. While God's plan ultimately does not hang on your every move, over the course of a lifetime, God uses us to do good things, and we have a much bigger impact than we might imagine. This is the lesson that George learns in the movie. And one conclusion is that even when we go through darkness and despair, at the end of the day, it's a wonderful life. The world is better because we are in it, trying to spread God's love by following Jesus. And even when we fail, and we fail a lot, even when we mess up, there is redemption. There is a second chance. There is a possibility of changing course and making the lives of other people better because of our presence. I went through a particularly dark time when separated from my son Jackson. I was depressed, and I sometimes thought that the world would be better without me. I never created a plan or made a serious attempt, but I fantasized about dying and imagined that everyone would be better off. But then I thought about my kids, what it would do to them, and how their life would be different if I were gone. I would never have met Emma, Isaac, and Evie, and they would have lost all the experiences with me that made their lives better. I would have never been ordained an elder in the United Methodist Church. I would have never served as a pastor. I would have never met the people at Dundee UMC, Christ UMC, Shepherd's Community UMC. I would have never met you here at First United Methodist Church of Cocoa Beach. I wouldn't have had a positive impact through my sermons, Bible studies, and pastoral counseling. My friends here, many of whom don't attend our church, would have never known me. At the time, I questioned whether my life mattered, but looking back, I can see the hole that would have been left had I cast in my chips and taken my own life. I also think about the immense joy I would have missed, seeing my kids grow up, moving back to Florida from Nashville, Tennessee, and reconnecting with my family and friends, getting married and becoming Tupop to Evie and Isaac, and building countless relationships that have been a source of joy, countless relationships with people like you. How would life have been different, not only for me, but for all the people connected to me, if that hurting and broken 31-year-old decided to commit suicide? And this is just my story, one story among more than 8 billion. You have your story too. And I encourage you to think of all the good things that have happened that would not have happened, not only for you, but for others, if you had not been born, or if during a dark season of despair, you decided to end your own life. You may think your life is insignificant, that you've never done anything important, but take a journey with George Bailey and think about the connections. Think of the good in the world that would be lost, again, not only by you, but by the people you have helped along the way. You have a direct and an indirect impact that is beyond your comprehension. Are you awake, church? You have a direct and an indirect impact that is beyond your comprehension. And when you get this perspective, it can help you see that your life is much more important than you might think. That you really do matter, that you are not a burden to the people around you, and that life would be worse if you were not here. I want to end by briefly reflecting on angels. I wonder how many of you here believe in angels. A few people have raised their hand. Studies show that approximately 77% of people believe in angels, including 40% of non-religious people, which is interesting. Others don't literally believe in angels and are more skeptical. The word angel in the Bible means messenger, and it does not exclusively refer to supernatural or heavenly beings. But it is also used to describe regular human beings that deliver a message from God. And even when angels are described as spiritual beings, they always look like people. This helps us understand the verse in the book of Hebrews that says, "Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it." Angels, whether supernatural beings or human beings, have a clear purpose in the Bible, to bring a message of hope from God that gives us strength. Angels strengthen us during times of darkness and despair. For example, an angel appears to Hagar in the Old Testament and strengthens her after Abraham abandons her in the desert with her infant son Ishmael. When the prophet Elijah was praying for death, which I mentioned earlier, an angel came and strengthened him. When Jesus was tempted in the desert and when he was agonizing in the Garden of Gethsemane, angels appeared to strengthen him. And in the Christmas story, angels appear to Zechariah, Mary, and Joseph. And angels were also present at the empty tomb after Jesus' resurrection. And in every case, somebody say every case, in every case, they delivered a message of hope and strength. Has God ever sent you an angel? Some people testify to encounters with supernatural beings, but God also sends regular people like you and me to be angels for others, to offer messages of hope and strength. When I was about 19 years old, I was working as a lifeguard at the YMCA in Lakeland, Florida, and it was a particularly confusing and tumultuous time in my life. A man named Mike showed up at the pool on a regular basis. Fully clothed, he would bring a plastic chair to sit beside me for conversation while I was trying to work and save lives. Mike was disabled after having a massive stroke as a young man, and he was sometimes difficult to understand because of speech aphasia, but he wanted to be my friend. At first, it was strange. I thought, why is this complete stranger who's old enough to be my father so interested in me? And things got really weird when, out of the blue, he started saying, "Methinks you will be a pastor." Now, at this point in my life, I had not even considered ministry. But every time I objected, he said the same thing. "Methinks you will be a pastor." At times, I got irritated and thought, I wish this old man would leave me alone. 3 years later, I left Lakeland and never saw Mike again. Looking back, I came to see him as an angel sent from God. And the sad thing is, he probably never knew it, because he never saw me become a pastor. How many times has this happened to you? When has God sent others into your life as messengers of hope, people that gave you new insight and strength to carry on when you just felt like you couldn't do it? Did you even notice that you were in the presence of an angel? Or how many times has God used you to send a message of hope and strength, to be an angel to someone else? Did you know that that's who you were? That that's what you were doing? Sometimes we're angels to our spouse, our children, our friends, and we don't even know it. This has probably happened more times than you can possibly imagine. And this is part of the positive impact that would be lost if you had never been born, or if you had decided to take your own life. Part of what this means, my friends, is that when we encounter people in despair and darkness, we are called by God to love them, to have compassion on them, to help them carry their burdens, to be a source of hope and strength. And we can do this even when we ourselves are going through dark times and feel like people would be better off without us. God can still use you, even in those dark moments. If we pull all of the main ideas of the sermon together, we are reminded first that darkness never has the last word. Death never has the last word. Hate never has the last word. Somebody say amen. Despair and darkness never has the last word. Things might seem hopeless right now, but God can lead you back to the light and help you to rediscover a new purpose. Can help you to see that your life is not meaningless, that you haven't lost your mojo, for those Austin Power fans, right? But that there's still something for you to do. There are still people for you to bless. So don't give up. Reach out for help. Keep trusting God. Keep trying to connect with others. And keep your eyes open for those opportunities when God can use you. And second, we are reminded of how God does indeed use us to be instruments of healing. God uses us to proclaim the good news of life and hope in the midst of death and despair. God sends us as angels to speak words of hope and strength. And even when we feel insignificant, even when we feel like our life doesn't matter, I guarantee you I can find at least one person in your life that looks up to you, that puts you on a pedestal, that says, I wish I had their life, or that person brings so much meaning and value and purpose into my life. By the time our film ends, our character, George Bailey, his eyes are opened. And now, with this new perspective, he wants to live, and he gets excited about the possibilities. He prays, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I want to live. So he is taken back to his house, where he finds his family and a large crowd of people. His wife had sent a message throughout the town about the lost $8,000, and all the people that George had helped through the years came pouring into his house to help him, to raise the money to keep him in business. And he can't believe it. And what I love about this film is that at the end, they sing a Charles Wesley hymn. They sing a carol written by the brother of John Wesley, the father of the Methodist Church. Check it out. Friends, it was not Clarence Oddbody that saved George, but all the angels in his house that night, surrounding him with messages of hope and strength. Look for the angels in your life and be an angel for others. And this, my friends, is the good news of the gospel this morning. Thanks be to God. Hey everyone, it's Pastor Mark, and I want to thank you for tuning in. I also want to thank First United Methodist Church of Cocoa Beach, which helps make this ministry possible. If you would like to make a donation to the church, go to our church website, fumccb.com. Also, if you're in town, I hope that you will visit one of our services in person, so that we'll have an opportunity to meet. May God bless you as you find your next steps in following Jesus.